I think we're joined now by the author, Fred Jerome. Are you there, sir?
Right here, Phil, yes.
I want to tell our listeners you're the author of The Einstein File, a very important book, J. Edgar Hoover's Secret War Against the World's Most Famous Scientist. You also are the co-author of with Roger Taylor of Einstein on Race and Racism. And the third book, which you've edited, is Einstein on Israel and Zionism. I really hope our listeners know about these books, and well, look, if they don't, locate them and read them. And now, but you've written an article, and it's in the Americans for Middle East Understanding. It's called Al-Tamimi et al. Versus Adelson et al. And
The first name is Al-Tamimi.
Al-Tamimi, yes.
Right.
But the second guy is not Mr. Al-Tamimi, yes. The second guy is a very famous man, I guess he gets some court attention, but this is a major story, and the reason we want to talk to you today, as you point out in the article, which is at ameu.org, the American media is somehow not so interested when Sheldon Adelson, America's most famous billionaire, is being taken to court by Palestinians. So what's this case about, and why aren't the U.S. media interested?
Okay, the article actually is in a magazine that this organization put out called The Link, L-I-N-K, and you can get it online, ameu.org, The Link, and it's in the current issue of The Link.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about a lawsuit that was filed in federal district court in Washington, D.C. more than 1 year ago by a group of Palestinians, some in this country and some in Palestine. Originally, there were 37 Palestinians involved, and now it's gone up because others have joined the suit, so it's over more than 60 Palestinians involved.
By the way, the number of billionaires has declined, right?
Well, then someone passed away.
Uh-huh.
But their estates are still being sued. So there were 8 billionaires, and a couple of Israeli banks involved, and a number of so-called non-profit organizations, which I'll come to.
Mm-hmm.
And the suit was filed in the federal district court asking for $34.5 billion in damages. Mm-hmm. Which seems like a lot, except each of the plaintiffs, each of the people involved in the suit has specific complaints. That is, as the Israelis have expanded their settlements in the West Bank, they have taken land and they have, the charges, stolen land and destroyed homes, moved people out. And actually, in some cases, as you can read in this article, actually killed people who were resisting the taking of their land, the Palestinians who were resisting the taking of their land. So the suit charges that since the beginning of the settlement building in 1976, that the Israelis have forcibly expelled some 400,000 Palestinians from their land and built 56,000 new homes and apartments. These are Jewish-only homes and apartments in the settlements. And as we know, the settlements have been continuing to expand since the suit was filed, and at least one new settlement has been approved by the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
So the suit charges that the money for this expansion of these settlements has come largely from 8 billionaires in this country, 8 American billionaires, starting with Sheldon Adelson, one of the leading billionaires in the country, and that the money has gone from the billionaires, that is, hundreds of millions of dollars. I suppose if you're billionaires, hundreds of millions of dollars may not be so much, but to most of us, hundreds of millions of dollars is a staggering amount.
Yes, I can affirm that.
And that money has has gone from these billionaires to the settlements and also to the Israeli army, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, through non-profit, so-called non-profit organizations, so that the money is given as a tax-deductible donation to a non-profit organization. In order to get credit for a tax-deductible donation, you have to give to an American non-profit organization. So these non-profit organizations, and there's a list of them in the lawsuit. I have some of them here.
That's available, too, at the link, isn't it?
Yes, it's available in the link. And they actually have addresses in the U.S. Sometimes the addresses are no more than a post office box or a little office. But that makes them an American nonprofit organization. So they can give $100 million to something called the Friends of the IDF, Friends of the Israeli Army, which is a nonprofit organization. They get a tax credit for that donation. So that means the rest of us, you and I, pay more taxes because they pay less than they should. And meanwhile, they're giving $100 million to the Israeli army for supposedly educational educational work. So if you teach a course on how to shoot high-powered rifles or submachine guns, that's a class, that's education. And I suppose if you teach a course on how to shoot better and how to kill people better, that's also a class, and how to torture people. Anyway, it's a little bit of a farce, and I don't
pedagogy
treat it lightly because this is
yes
this
it
amount
is.
Of money has been used to destroy lives, to root destroy homes, remove people from their homes, remove people from their land, and in this article, Al-Tamimi is the lead plaintiff of the 37 plaintiffs, so he's the first one, and I describe. His name is Bassem Al-Tamimi, and in this article I describe his particular complaint, and he describes how his land was seized in 1967.
Yes, he's from Hebron. Hebron, right? He's from a family and from Hebron that's been there for 400 years.
Right. And he said 1976 the settlers came and started building settlements on our land, and his family started resisting. And then he describes the struggles, and several members of his family have been killed, and so on. Now, each of the plaintiffs has a complaint like that. Not all with people killed, but in some cases, in the case, for example, Susan Abu Hawa, who is an award-winning author of a best-selling novel. One of them was called Morning in Jenin, which was the best-selling novel in 2010. She's one of the plaintiffs, and she's charging that hundreds and hundreds of acres of her land has just been stolen by the Israelis in order to build these settlements. Mm-hmm. And if you have to read through the whole thing to get a better picture. But the point is that this lawsuit was filed, as I said, more than a year ago. So it was filed in March of 2016, and yet nobody seems to, probably most of your listeners, probably very few of your listeners know about this.
None. I'm going to start with zero.
Very few people. Go ahead.
You took this up. You didn't just let the question lie. You spoke to the newspaper of record, the New York Times, which follows very closely matters with Israel. But they didn't talk about this.
Yes. You're absolutely right. I found it hard to believe that a lawsuit for $34 billion filed by 37 people, each one of whom has a very specific complaint, one of whom is an award-winning author and others and so on and so forth, that this would be totally ignored by the mainstream media. Not a word, not a peep.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few small publications or websites that did cover it. Al Jazeera did cover it and so on. But for most people, they never heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
And how is it possible they never heard of it? So I wrote a letter to the New York Times describing the lawsuit, and I said, how is it that you haven't written about this? Well, when you write to the public editor of the New York Times, which is where these letters go, you get a form letter back basically saying, we've read your letter, and we have nothing to say. We'll get back to you if we have anything to say. I think I have the exact words of yeah. their response in here somewhere. Yeah. But anyway, so I wrote a second letter because I said, well, there is a case here. It is a significant case, and in fact, it came at just at the time when the U.S. was abstaining in the vote in the United Nations. Do you remember that?
Yes. And shocked everyone. Obama actually did something
by not doing
something.
And the Israelis were upset about that, so it was in the news. It was something really in the news, and mm-hmm. certainly this lawsuit would be relevant to a big news story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote to them again, and I said, well, this is an important news story. How can you ignore it? And within 24 hours, you get the same letter back from the New York Times. It's a form letter.
It's kind of like praying, I guess.
It really is an amazing thing.
God has heard your prayers. He'll get back to you.
Right. And just right, exactly. And I didn't write to the Washington Post and the other mainstream media, but mainly because the Times is an agenda setter, and if the Times were to cover it, I'm sure the others would cover it also. But mm-hmm. none of them has covered it yet, and the case is pending. And the Israelis, of course, well, I shouldn't say of course, the Israelis have not given it any coverage either. There was one Israeli news source mm-hmm. or news agency which called it a frivolous suit and was sure it would be dismissed and thrown out of court immediately in a short while. Well, it's been a year and 2 months, and it's still going strong, and the judge did put it on hold for a while so she could study it. This is the federal judge.
Yes.
And presumably discuss it with others and so on. And then in January of this year, she returned it to an active case, and it is currently active, and there'll be a couple of rulings on it in June. I think they're scheduled to be in June. Mm-hmm. So we'll hear more about it, but that may not be covered either. Whatever happens may not be covered.
Well, we start where we start. But this, yeah. by the way, your article, to remind our listeners, they can find this article at ameu.org, the link. And by the way, I found it today by writing Fred Jerome and Sheldon Adelson.
Well,
so the two of you are linked until cyberspace dies.
I should mention also that, aside from that, which I'll let it slide off my shoulder, but the attorney who filed the suit on behalf of the Palestinians is named Martin McMahon, McMahon, and he's in Washington, D.C., and actually could use, anybody wants to help, to contact him and possibly send a little donation to help him. I know you're asking for donations there too. Yeah. So
as soon as I get my 60 grand, I'm going to ship it down there.
But they need help to get translations and documents mm-hmm. and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Now, Fred, yeah. I want to make sure I ask you this. This is, frankly, a very celebrated individual. He's not shy about. Kind of, a lot of billionaires are shy. I don't know why, but he's not. But one of the things he's not shy about, he's a very close friend of our new president, or your new president, Donald Trump. He's also a very close friend of Mr. Netanyahu. And I just wonder, because you're experiencing political volatility due to the Americans being in a state of shock, particularly American Democrats, over Trump's presidency. I wonder if he probably assumes, having Trump as a friend, that he's going to not have a problem with the court. However, there must be some who would not be interested in protecting him.
Well, the number of the people involved in this lawsuit that Martin McMahon filed last year are also involved in the Trump administration, and they're directly involved with Israeli banks, particularly the Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, and Trump seems to have given him the power to do almost anything within the administration.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
you're my son-in-law, handle the banks.
The Kushner family has given like hundreds of thousands of dollars to the Friends of the IDF, of the Israel, the Friends of the Israeli Army, through one of these nonprofit organizations, and they're now making policy for the Trump administration, or at least carrying out the policy for the Trump administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this is not a case that is, especially the lawsuit was filed well over a year ago. It's not limited to the Trump administration, but somehow Trump seems to have a knack for making most things a little worse.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I want to congratulate you. We two or three weeks ago, we asked you about to evaluate Trump, and you have compared him to Nero. I think since that time, a lot of others have started to get on the bandwagon that he might be Nero.
It really is that, you know, during the decline of the Roman Empire, Nero, well, whether he actually didn't piddle on a fiddle, because there were no fiddles in those days. Whatever he did, he didn't put out the fire.
Yeah.
And about two thirds or three quarters of Rome burned in that fire.
Yes.
And what Nero did when the fire was out was to build a big hotel on the land that had been burned, and what are called houses of pleasure, which you can imagine what they are.
Oh my goodness!
Also on this land that was burned. So as an emperor, he was also a busy real estate operator.
So now we have Trump and Adelson. Good.
It sounds exactly like what Trump would do.
Yes.
What Adelson would do anyway.
Yes.
Which would be a real estate operation. So I think that there's a real similarity between Trump and Nero. They're both a little nutty.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would say is that the decline of the Roman Empire would have occurred with or without Nero.
Yeah.
And I think the decline of the empire that's going on in this country today probably would occur with or without Trump.
Yes.
They may use it for real estate operations, but the decline is there regardless, and it has to do with the system. And I don't think changing the emperor or changing the president is going to stop the decline, unfortunately.
It's, as it says in the Bible, the handwriting is on the wall. And of course, Trump can't read. I want to ask you, you made in an association in the article, I hope I understood it, that there is, it looks to me like a precedent which is almost problematic for the people who started this. There was a group called the Holy Land Foundation, quite respected,
correct,
took in millions of dollars, spent the money on the institutions of one type or another, West Bank, I guess, Gaza, I don't know. And they got taken to court and charged with giving money to people who they should have known were criminals, involved in, I shouldn't say criminals, people
terror,
involved
terror.
In violence and terror. Now, but that's a precedent for this case, isn't it? Or is it?
Yeah, and I think what's amazing is the difference is that the Holy Land Foundation was actually set up by Palestinians and sent money basically to Palestinian families in Palestine who needed it, the children's clothes and all kinds of things like that. And they were accused of sending money to Hamas and therefore aiding terrorism. And so the Holy Land Foundation was shut down in 2002, right after 9/11. And then five officials of the Holy Land Foundation were indicted and charged with all kinds of crimes, and they were put on trial for something like 6 months. At the end of the trial, not a single one of them was found guilty of anything. Either they were acquitted or the charges, there was a hung jury. And the judge in the case said to the prosecution, said to the government lawyers, well, I hope you guys will try this again. And they brought in, they were retried, and this time they brought in a special witness who was an unidentified, supposedly Israeli intelligence operator, who couldn't be named because of security reasons, and couldn't be cross-examined.
Could not be cross-examined.
And he just said that they were all giving money to Hamas, and they were all convicted, and two of them are serving 65-year sentences currently, and their families are desperately trying to do something to get the sentences reduced and to get them out. Mm-hmm. And the other three are serving 25-year sentences.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between giving money to Israeli sources, the settlements and Israeli army sources and so on, which seems to be a tax-deductible activity, and giving money to Palestinians, which seems to be something that can get thrown in jail, mm-hmm. is quite an amazing difference, and I suppose not really a surprising difference.
Yeah. By the way, according to the argument of the lawyer McMahon, he said this is in violation of course, international law, American law, and Israeli law. I mean, there have been Israeli courts have on occasion said you got to tear that settlement down. You can't be doing so.
Rare occasion, though.
Yes,
there have been a couple of cases.
But it is these people who are giving this money to defense forces who are in the occupied territories. There are cases. There is precedent there too that this is could be illegal, and they're very cavalier about it.
Absolutely, and I think that the fact that all of the administrations in this country, from Bush to Obama to Trump even, have said to the Israelis, we don't want you to build any more settlements.
Mm-hmm.
And, I remember Bush made a big speech, no more settlements and so on and so on. So the Israeli government has officially not built these settlements. They've been built without the government, just supposedly.
It's called a wink-wink policy.
Yes, right. And, of course, now the government, the Israeli government has gone back to, they are going to build another settlement, and nobody's going to do anything about that from this country. At least that's the way it seems at this point.
But this, at least a U.S. court is, as the expression is, seized on the issue, and it has to go forward. They didn't toss it out or say, but so far, it remains active.
It remains active, although I should say, and I'm sure Mark McMahon, who is filing this case and fighting it and taking it up with very little money. He's doing it pro bono, and so he needs whatever help he can get. But I'm sure he would say that, look, this is a step. My lawsuit is not going to change the system, but it may help a little bit. It may expose who's responsible for the crimes and do something to stop them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's going to take more than a lawsuit and probably more than an election and more than a radio station, with all due respect.
Yeah, I think you're right, but we do have to get our story straight and the facts right, and I do believe that this article is very important, AMEU.org, the link, and it's Al Tamimi et al. Versus Adelson et al. Last question, Fred, if I could. You also point out in your article that the New York Times has trouble with the issue of Albert Einstein, and you've noticed in the past their difficulty when it comes to Israel and Albert Einstein. They have misrepresented his views. Could you roughly sum up his views for us?
Yeah, well, what I said was, look, why didn't the New York Times cover this suit? What's wrong with them? And it could be because they're having financial difficulties and they're laying people off and they don't have as many reporters as they used to have, and which is true, but it could also be because of their political bias, which is very pro-Zionist, pro-Israeli Zionist and Palestinian. And the example of that I gave was in describing Einstein. The New York Times described Einstein as a champion of the State of Israel, somebody who worked very hard for the State of Israel, but they didn't publish that description until Einstein was dead. They waited until his obituary before they published that, because, in fact, that was not the case. Einstein was actually opposed to the formation of the State of Israel and said so publicly in the Times that he even reported it years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But their bias came out, and it has come out over and over again, and I think that could explain, probably does explain, why they've not given any coverage whatsoever to this suit by Martin McMahon and the Palestinians.
I think you're right. Fred Jerome, thank you very, very much. We look forward to talking to you again, and we're going to keep up with this case, just like you are.
Well, thank you, and I hope you let me, please, if anybody has any questions, feel free to send them in, and you can send them to Mark McMahon as well. He'd be happy to take any questions, and
good.
He can probably answer them better than I can, but send them to me, too, if you feel like it.
All right. Thank you, Fred. Talk
okay,
to you soon.
Thank you, bye-bye. Too. Right. Bye-bye.
And it's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. That was Fred Jerome and his book, Einstein on Israel and Zionism. It's a wonderful book because guess what? It's written by Albert Einstein. You can't go wrong saying things like that. And it is, by the way, it's a big book. He had many things to say about this. He was involved with the Zionist movement, very friendly to them. He knew many of them. They were close friends. He also, though, was a critical intellectual who had his own opinions. And it was one of those people, not a joiner. You couldn't twist his arm. Boy, it couldn't be done.